States. Mr. Carranza.
May you please the court. My name is Pablo Carranza, and I represent the defendant appellant, Efrain Flores-Sanchez. Mr. Flores-Sanchez was convicted of the federal crime of alien reentry, which triggered the application of sentencing guideline 2L1.2, which defines a crime of violence more narrowly than the career offender guideline. At sentencing, the district court mistakenly classified a prior Wisconsin conviction of false imprisonment.
In what sense is it mistaken when it was done on the defendant's concession? Judge asks, are there any problems? Defense counsel says, no. An objection on this ground was made, and it was withdrawn expressly.
In retrospect,
of course, the United States argues that that is a waiver. And if there is a waiver, then no error has occurred. There's no plain error review. There's no nothing. So why is this not a waiver?
In hindsight, Your Honor, I'm of the position that that withdrawal was a mistake.
The argument, my waiver is a mistake, is not admissible.
I would argue, Your Honor, that it was a forfeiture, which would allow this court to proceed in this case under a plain error analysis.
But the problem with that argument, which may be the only thread you can use here, is the transcript contains the very explicit statement, I would agree with Mr. O'Shea, there is no longer any ambiguity as to whether at least the false imprisonment conviction that Mr. Flores-Sanchez has on his record qualifies as a criminal violence. The objection is withdrawn. A forfeiture essentially means you forgot about it. You didn't say anything. There's nothing in the record. An explicit statement like this is, in fact, a waiver, and counsel is entitled to do that on behalf of a defendant. I mean, maybe there's a 2255 motion out there somewhere. I don't wish those on anybody, but if a potentially valid argument was explicitly given up by the lawyer and the person wound up spending more time in prison, they might be able to say there was an effective assistance of counsel.
Well, Your Honor, in withdrawing my objection, it was essentially on a mistaken view of the law that should be applied, or the analysis that should be applied to that Wisconsin conviction. At the sentencing hearing, the government argued that essentially that prior Wisconsin conviction qualified as a crime of violence based on arguments that apply more squarely with an analysis under the career offender context.
Sure. No, we understand the difference in the two standards. The only question is whether there's anything in this case that presents it properly to us. So I'm not sure. I mean, of course, this has turned out to be a somewhat more complex area than people may have thought in light of the Supreme Court's recent decision in the Begay case and other things, even if it had been the other standard for a risk of violence. But in any event, I think you've got a steep uphill battle here.
Well, without due respect, Your Honor, in at a very basic level, I think it would be unfair to essentially penalize the defendant here for a situation where, had I simply persisted in that objection, I'm of the belief that the...
That's just what the doctrine of waiver does, right? There would be no such thing as a waiver if all you had to do to be relieved of the waiver is say, I regret it now.
Well, at the same time, Your Honor, I think the principles of waiver also look at whether there was a particular tactical decision or reason that to believe that in withdrawing that objection, counsel in some way was essentially taking a gamble that the defendant would be better off by withdrawing that waiver.
Well, the standard actually is an intentional relinquishment of a known right. And looking at the transcript, it certainly looks like that to me. It looks intentional. It refers expressly to the potential of objecting on that basis to the guideline. So I'm not sure where you would find in the law of waiver the idea that I think you're, in a sense, you're confusing the ineffective assistance of counsel standard under Strickland against Washington, where certainly tactics and other factors like that would be important. So it's, as I said, in this kind of posture, it's a difficult argument.
You're not contending that Judge Chavez sort of led you into this, are you?
No, Your Honor. Essentially, the difficulty that I went through was we had a pre-sentence report that classified that prior conviction as a crime of violence. I made the same mistake that the district court made in confusing the two different definitions of crime of violence. I believe at this point, if I can go as far as saying that there's little doubt that under the immigration context that a Wisconsin conviction for, or the Wisconsin statute for false imprisonment does not qualify as a crime of violence, I would point to the recent Court of Appeals, this court's decision just last month in U.S. versus Billups, where it analyzed the very statute that we're talking about here, Wisconsin false imprisonment.
File a Rule 28J letter.
I'm sorry, Judge?
Did you file a Rule 28J letter bringing Billups to the court's attention?
No, I did not.
You're into your rebuttal time if you want to save some time.
Yes, I would like to do that. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. O'Shea.
Tim O'Shea for the United States.
The only question I have for you, Mr. O'Shea, is why you want to stand on the waiver, given that what's likely to happen next is the 2255 action.
And I had exactly the same question. It seems like a huge waste of time.
Well,
you can waive the waiver, you know.
Well,
unless you're just really looking for another opportunity to file another brief.
Well, as much as I look forward to coming down here and speaking to all of you, that was not my intent. A couple of things. Number one, I will address that. First of all, I respectfully submit that the Wisconsin's unlawful restraint crime is one of those crimes we talk about in Jaimes Jaimes. The court talks about in Jaimes Jaimes that says, hey, look, some of these crimes can be committed as crimes of violence, and some of them you can commit the same crime in ways that don't implicate the crime of violence. So you have to look into it. And one of the things you look into is the information in the plea colloquy. And I can't, even if I waived waiver, I'd also have to waive forfeiture, because by the time we get to forfeiture, the defendant has to show that it's plain error. The defendant hasn't even tried to show that it's plain error. To show that it's error, which is plain, the defendant would have to show that he committed this crime in a way that did not implicate.
I'm lost, counsel.
Okay.
I appreciate that it is sometimes possible to look at the charging documents and so on to show that a particular crime was committed in a particular way, but I thought the sentencing guideline applicable here, unlike something like Section 924, asks us to look only at the elements of the offense and not at the general riskiness.
Absolutely. And that was what I...
And if we're confined to the elements of the offense, I don't see how looking at the charging papers is going to help us much.
Well, the elements of the offense, one of the ways one can commit, one of the ways that the government can prove the element of unlawful restraint in the state of Wisconsin is to show that there was no consent because the victim was put in fear by the use or threatened imminent use of physical violence on the victim or person nearby or the victim's family. So what I'm saying is one of the ways to commit this crime is foursquare within the crime of violence under 2L1.2. If I didn't believe that, yeah, I'd be with the court. But that's one of the ways. And we look at the charging document, what the defendant pled to. On the same day, he pleads guilty to physically battering the same woman that he unlawfully restrained.
Well, but it's the getting to the charging document that's the problem.
Would the charging document be that specific? In other words, those elements?
Oh, is the information itself? No.
That's where the problem.
Well, so if this isn't in the charging papers, then this is all utterly pointless.
Well, the elements are the building blocks of a crime. The things that the government must prove to hold somebody accountable for a particular crime.
And it's in the alternative. Whoever intentionally confines or restrains another without the person's consent, and so on and so forth. And if the information just repeats all of that, and 2L, 2.1B says that's all you can look, or 1.2B says all that's what you can look to, I don't see how you can...
Well, and the other point I made at sentencing, I think, is quite a valid point. The defendant was charged not with confining or restraining, but restraining. And the government contended at sentencing, and I think it's right that the common everyday use of the word restraint means force.
Means violence? I don't know why that would be true.
You're not asking us to overrule Billups only a week after we handed it down, are you?
No, I think...
This is an argument that was made and lost in Billups. I don't see where we're going here. Now, it may be that we're going nowhere. The United States is entitled to stand on the waiver.
But
it looks like you're just setting us up for a totally wasted procedure.
I disagree. I understand where the court's coming from. Look, if this is a man whose crime is returning to the United States to work as a roofer, I'm not going to advocate for a 16-level increase just because. I think it's appropriate here. Now, if the defendant...
But do you really want us to write an opinion that says, here are all the reasons why this would have been a good argument if it had been made? See Billups.
Well, I understand.
And then we've pretty much written the brief for the 2255.
Right. I would respectfully disagree on Billups. I don't think they got into the distinction between what is confinement or restraint in Billups.
I don't think you're getting the point.
Perhaps not.
If the United States thinks it can win this on the merits, then it should waive the waiver. We will resolve it now in your favor. If, on the other hand, the government is going to lose this on the merits in the end, dragging this out through another round of 2255 proceedings doesn't seem to be a favor to anybody. The question is, why are you insisting that we not reach the merits if you're as persuaded as you say you are that you will win on the merits?
It's sort of a gamble. I dare you. Look. I think we've got a valid waiver here. These are the appellate court's rules. And look, and the waiver is in the eyes of the beholders.
It's just a short-term look. I don't think any of us on this panel has a problem with the first step of your argument, which is, did the defense counsel waive this? Certainly looks that way to me on the record. That we're worried about step two and three and four.
Right.
What happens next?
Well, I respectfully submit that it is a component, an element, that this crime can be committed through violence. If you tell me I'm wrong, then you tell me I'm wrong. But I would encourage the court to go back and look at it.
On the waiver, we won't be telling you you're wrong in this case. What we will be saying is we will have another round of litigation in which you'll get to file more papers and you may get another trip to Chicago out of it.
As much as I like seeing the court, that is not my desire. If the court, after analyzing this case hard, believes that it is not possible for this crime to be proved and committed and proved as an element of violence, then the 2255 will sail through, and the defendant will be,
But we wouldn't be saying anything about it is the problem, unless the government decides to file a paper with us. After the argument, maybe you want to go back and think about it and let us know.
You want an opinion that says even if there wasn't waiver?
I would encourage the court to think hard about it.
That's called an advisory opinion,
right.
I'm afraid.
All right. Well, I'm confident my appellate advisor will be listening to this this afternoon, and we will talk about it when I get back. But for now, I'm going to stand on the waiver, and I encourage the court to consider whether or not this crime can be committed through violence.
Do you want some time to perhaps file something additional?
Well, if you don't hear from me in the next couple of days, Your Honor, you'll know we're standing on the waiver. I appreciate the court's attention. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. O'Shea. Anything further, Mr. Cronchett?
Your Honor, I would simply rest on my previous argument. I'd be more than happy to answer any additional questions the court may have. Otherwise, I would rest.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement.